So, we spend a lot of time in the Security Operations Center talking about the limitations of rigid rules. I mean, for anyone working with a traditional intrusion detection system, your standard deployments of, Snort or Suricata, you already know the architecture.
Oh, yeah.
You have human-written signatures, right? The system reads the action, it checks the header for the routing IPs and ports, and then it scans the rule options for a specific string in the payload. And if that logic triggers, the connection drops, or an alert fires, it's purely deterministic. You are essentially just running this massive continuous reject script against live network traffic.
Right, and that deterministic approach has a very specific failure state.
Yes.
It creates this binary defense where you are completely blind to anything that hasn't already been cataloged. You know,
Exactly.
you're relying on a human analyst to have already dissected a piece of malware, extracted its unique string, and then pushed that rule out to the firewall.
Which takes time.
Right. And by the time that signature actually propagates, you are already behind the curve on any zero-day exploit.
Yeah.
So the industry recognized this huge bottleneck, which forced the migration toward machine learning intrusion detection systems, or MLADS. We're shifting from Boolean logic, simple if-then statements, into these multidimensional probability spaces.
And I really want to focus on that shift today because this deep dive is geared specifically toward the entry-level SOC trainees who are inheriting these ML-based systems. You aren't just reading logs anymore,
Yeah.
You're managing statistical models.
It's a completely different mindset.
It really is. And we are looking at a stack of training materials today that bridges this exact gap. We've got threat landscape reports from Fortinet,
Yeah.
the MyRAE-LS framework, and a highly detailed laboratory manual.
Yeah, that manual is incredible.
It's so thorough. And it includes a breakdown of CyberFlow IDS, which is a machine learning network IDS capstone project developed by Dr. Raul Sigakusen at the Asian Institute of Management.
Yeah, and the CyberFlow IDS project is just a perfect baseline because it moves past all that, theoretical marketing jargon of AI defense,
Absolutely.
and it looks at the actual mathematical trade-offs required to run an MLIDS in a real production environment. Dr. Gakusan built this as a working demo for General Builders Development Corporation. And to do that, he didn't just train a single algorithm. He established a full model tournament
Right.
using the CICIDS 2017 data set, which contains over 126,000 labeled network flows.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit because the idea of moving from signatures to a model tournament, it's a big jump. If I could use an analogy here,
Go for it.
it's like traditional signature-based rules are like a bouncer at a club checking a strict VIP list.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Like if you aren't on the ban list, you get in. It's very black and white. But an MLIDS is more like a seasoned detective sitting in the corner, just observing body language. You might not have a criminal record, but you're sweating, you're looking around nervously, you're acting suspiciously based on learned behavior.
That is exactly it. The bouncer only knows what he's been explicitly told, but the detective understands context.
Right.
And that's what we want to train these SOC trainees to understand. You're dealing with context now, not just lists.
Yeah, and I want to look at the mechanics of that tournament Dr. Gakusan ran, because the winner isn't necessarily the one with the highest academic score.
Go, not at all.
The manual details four models. So the baseline was a decision tree, which hit 99.21% accuracy with a training time of under 2 seconds, which is, it's highly interpretable. You
Wow.
can visually map the splits the algorithm makes based on features like packet size or connection duration.
Right, it's very easy for a human to read.
Exactly. But then they brought in XGBoost. And based strictly on the F1 score, XGBoost was the undisputed champion here.
Oh, yeah.
It delivered 99.56% accuracy, 99.10% precision, and 98.26% recall. I mean, if I'm looking at a dashboard, those numbers seem virtually flawless.
They're exceptional metrics, which, is fairly typical for XGBoost. It operates on a principle of sequential ensemble learning. So it built a decision tree, calculates the errors, what we call the residuals from that tree, and then builds a subsequent tree specifically designed to correct the mistakes of that first one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it just iterates this process, optimizing the loss function with each step. So mathematically, it produces an incredibly tight decision boundary.
But here is where production reality hits academic theory,
Nice
right?
element.
Despite those incredible metrics, Canral builders didn't deploy XG Boost for the live demo. They actually wired in the Random Forest model instead.
Yep.
And Random Forest had slightly lower overall performance across the board. I mean, it was 99.43% accuracy, 99.45% precision, and 97.16% recall. So if XGBoost is mathematically superior at defining that boundary, why are we downgrading the defense for the live network?
Well, what's fascinating here is that we have to look at the computational overhead at runtime.
Ah, what?
Because XGBoost builds its trees sequentially, right? Every single prediction has to follow that exact sequential path. Random Forest, however, uses bagging. Yeah, so it builds multiple trees independently and in parallel, and then aggregates their outputs. And in a live SoC environment, network throughput dictates your entire security stack.
Right, you can't slow down the business.
Exactly. The manual highlights that the Random Forest model executed predictions in approximately 21.8 milliseconds per packet.
21.8 milliseconds. That is the operational constraint right there.
It is.
If your MLIDS takes, say, 50 or 60 milliseconds to inspect a packet because it's traversing this highly complex sequential algorithm, you introduce latency.
And people hate latency.
Oh, yeah. In a high-volume corporate network, that latency compounds instantly. Your security appliance just becomes a massive bottleneck, TCP connections start timing out, and legitimate business operations start to degrade.
And then the IT team yells at the security team.
Always. That 21.8 millisecond execution time means Random Forest was fast enough to operate at line rate without breaking the network flow, which makes that, you know, slight dip in accuracy an acceptable operational compromise.
Right. It is the defining lesson of applied machine learning, especially for the trainees listening. A model is only valuable if it can survive the environment it operates in.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And we see the inverse of this compromise in the fourth model tested in the Cyberflow tournament.
Oh, the Naive Bayes one.
Yes. Yeah. The Naive Bayes classifier. Its overall accuracy was a dismal 64.22%.
Yikes.
Yeah. However, its recall was 97.93%.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Okay, do it.
If I am a security director defending a financial institution or a hospital, recall is the metric I care about most.
Because it catches everything.
Right. Recall measures the proportion of actual malicious attacks the model successfully identifies. So a 97.93% recall means this model is catching nearly every single threat that hits the wire. I honestly don't care if it's technically inaccurate in other areas. I just want a system that misses nothing. I would argue a hypersensitive model is exactly what a high-stakes environment needs.
And a lot of people make that argument, but you are ignoring the cost of that sensitivity.
Okay. How so?
We have to look at the precision metric to really understand why deploying that Naive Bayes model would completely cripple your SoC. Precision measures how many of the flagged alerts were actually real attacks.
Okay.
The Naive Bayes model had a precision of 31.81%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This means roughly 70% of the time, the system triggers an alert, it is a false positive.
But the analyst is still catching the real threats within that 30%, right? The threats aren't getting through.
They aren't getting through the firewall, sure, but they are getting lost in the queue.
Ah.
Human analysts have a finite cognitive capacity. If an MLIDS generates, say, 5,000 alerts in a single shift.
Which happens.
All the time.
Yeah.
And 3,500 of them are just legitimate background noise.
Yeah.
You know, an authorized vulnerability scanner doing its weekly sweep, a large file transfer from the marketing department, a misconfigured router. The analysts experience intense alert fatigue.
Right. The boy who cried wolf scenario.
Exactly. They cannot physically investigate every single flag. The psychological reality of the SoC is that analysts will begin to write tuning rules to suppress the noisy alerts. Or, even worse, they'll simply start ignoring the dashboard altogether.
Yeah, they'll just assume it's another false positive.
Right. So a system that flags everything provides zero actionable intelligence. It forces the human defenders to manually filter the data, entirely defeating the purpose of automating the detection in the first place.
So the model really has to balance the statistical confidence of the alert with the human capacity to actually investigate it.
Precise.
This really brings into focus how highly tuned a production system like that deployed Random Forest model actually is. I mean, it operates at 21.8 milliseconds. It balances precision and recall to protect the analyst's bandwidth. And it identifies anomalies without relying on those rigid human-written signatures.
It sounds perfect.
Yeah. It seems like a totally bulletproof setup. Yet the MITRE-ELIS framework is entirely dedicated to cataloging how these exact systems are compromised.
Yeah, because we are moving out of the realm of traditional software vulnerabilities.
Right.
You know, things like SQL injections or buffer overflows. We're moving into adversarial machine learning.
So what does this all mean for the threat landscape? AI versus AI sounds like a sci-fi movie.
Well, it's not physical robots fighting in a server room.
Right, right.
Adversarial ML fundamentally shifts the attack vector. You're no longer looking for a flaw in the code's syntax. You are looking to exploit the model's mathematical logic. And MITRE ATLAS tracks this evolution, really focusing on how threat actors manipulate the statistical weights of an AI system.
Okay, so how do they do that?
The framework divides these techniques into two primary vectors, poisoning and evasion.
Okay, let's break down the mechanics of poisoning first, because this relies on corrupting the model before it is ever deployed into production.
Exactly. It's an upstream attack.
So if an attacker can penetrate the data pipeline, say they gain access to the raw network logs that are being fed into that CICIDS 2017 training set, they don't actually need to break the algorithm itself. They just alter the underlying data.
Right. They inject subtle, malicious anomalies into the traffic, and they explicitly label them as benign.
Wow.
So during the training phase, the algorithm is calculating the optimal decision boundary based on that corrupted data. If you feed it poisoned data, the algorithm mathematically learns that your specific attack signature is just normal, everyday background noise.
That's terrifying.
It is, because when that model is eventually compiled and deployed on the real network, it operates perfectly according to its training.
But its reality has been skewed.
Exactly. It will actively ignore the attacker's traffic because it was mathematically conditioned to view it as completely safe.
But that requires really deep access to the development environment, right? Which isn't always feasible for a random attacker on the internet.
Right. It's a supply chain issue, basically. Yeah.
So the more immediate threat for a deployed system like General Builder's Random Forest that's already running is that second vector, evasion attacks.
Yes. Evasion happens at runtime.
Right. The model is locked, it's trained, and it's defending the network. The attacker has to alter their live payload so that the model misclassifies it on the fly.
Mm.
But I struggle with the logistics of this from the attacker's perspective. I mean, if I'm an external threat actor, the MLADS is a black box to me. I don't have the CIC data set. I don't know the hyperparameter tuning of their specific random forest.
Right.
How do I mathematically evade a system I can't even see?
Well, the thing is, you don't need to see the model's code. You only need to observe its outputs.
Okay.
Attackers use probing techniques to map the decision boundary from the outside.
Oh.
So they send varied streams of traffic and monitor the network's response. You know, does the connection drop? Does it throttle? Does it pass through seamlessly?
They're just testing the fences.
Exactly. By measuring the inputs against the resulting actions, they can train their own what we call surrogate model that mathematically mirrors the behavior of the target IDS.
Oh, that's clever.
Very. And once they understand the statistical thresholds of the target, they apply gradient descent techniques to find the absolute path of least resistance through those thresholds.
So they are calculating exactly which characteristics of their attack need to change to cross the boundary from malicious to benign.
Exactly.
And the laboratory manual actually provides a concrete simulation of this exact process, which is so valuable for the trainees. Lab 6.1 is titled Fool the Model.
I love this lab.
It's so good. The objective for the trainee is to take a standard DDoS attack, you know, distributed denial of service, which normally generates massive volumes of traffic intended to overwhelm a server, and they have to alter it at runtime so the freshly trained random forest model completely ignores it.
Right. And to execute this evasion, trainees have to analyze the model's feature importance.
Okay, explain feature importance for us.
Sure. So a machine learning algorithm doesn't weigh every single byte of a network packet equally. During training, it evaluates which specific metadata fields the features provide the most information gain in separating normal traffic from an attack.
Okay, so it looks for the most obvious clues.
Right. In a random forest, this is often calculated using something called Giannini impurity.
Right. And the manual provides the Giannini impurity chart for this specific model. And it is incredibly revealing because a feature like total underscore BAWD underscore packets, the count of packets flowing backward from the destination server to the source, has a mathematical weight approaching zero.
Meaning the model just doesn't care.
Right. The model simply doesn't factor it into the decision.
Which is highly actionable intelligence for the attacker.
Yeah.
If you know a feature has zero importance, you can spike that value manipulate it, or randomize it completely, and the model's confidence score won't shift a fraction of a percent.
Because it's ignoring it anyway.
Right. You have to focus your evasion on the features the model heavily weights. So for a DDoS attack, rate-based detectors are historically trained to heavily weight features like flow underscore bytes, underscore per underscore sec, and flow underscore packets, underscore per underscore sec.
Okay, speed and volume.
Exactly. Yeah. The model is actively looking for rapid, massive spikes in velocity.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the trainee in Lab 6.1 applies a low and slow evasion technique.
Yeah.
They take the DDoS payload, but they intentionally throttle the transmission speed, so they push the flow bytes per second just below the specific mathematical threshold that the model associates with an attack.
Mm-hmm.
But to ensure the DDoS still ultimately achieves its goal of consuming the server's resources, they keep the total forward packets feature high. So they maintain the total volume of the attack, but they dilate the time window.
Right. They stretch it out. The statistical profile of the traffic shifts entirely. By depressing those velocity features while maintaining the volume, the traffic no longer clusters mathematically with known DDoS signatures in that multidimensional space we talked about.
Right. It moves away from the bad neighborhood.
Exactly. Instead, it drifts into the cluster that represents heavy but completely normal user activity.
Like what?
Like a legitimate user screaming a 4K video, or maybe an admin initiating a really large database query. The random forest analyzes the throttled flow, calculates the probabilities, and classifies it as benign.
You know, it's similar to financial structuring. If you want to deposit a massive sum of illicit cash into a bank without triggering the automated reporting software.
Not that we're giving advice here.
Right. Purely theoretical. You don't walk in with a single $100,000 transfer. The system is hard-coded to flag that velocity and volume combination immediately.
Right.
Instead, you use smurfing techniques. You make a series of small $9,000 deposits over several weeks. The total volume of cash remains the same. You still deposit 100 grand, but you have manipulated the transaction rate to stay below the algorithm's learned threshold for suspicious activity.
And the system registers the behavior as standard everyday banking.
Exactly. Lab 6.1 applies that exact concept to network packets. It's like smuggling a ton of sand out of a beach. If you use a dump truck, you know, high rate, the guards stop you immediately. But if you carry a pocket full of sand out every single day for a year, low and slow, the guards just register you as a normal beachgoer, but you still steal the sand.
That is a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And it demonstrates that ML models are fundamentally brittle when exposed to data that falls outside their training distribution.
Yeah.
Once the trainees understand how easily a single model's thresholds can be manipulated by just, you know, altering the transmission rate, they have to completely reevaluate their defense strategy.
Right, because if it's that easy to fool, how do we fix it?
Well, the CyberFlow IDS final report addresses this directly in Section 7.3, which covers error and risk observations and future work. It outlines the architectural changes required to harden an AI system against these specific evasions.
And the first defensive countermeasure Dr. Gaki-san highlights is ensembling. Now, we already know random forest is technically an ensemble of decision trees, but this strategy suggests ensembling entirely different types of algorithms, right?
Yes. You combine models that process data through fundamentally different mathematical mechanisms.
Okay, give me an example.
So you might deploy a random forest alongside a support vector machine or maybe a deep neural network.
Okay.
Because they calculate their decision boundaries differently, they have uncorrelated errors.
Ah. So an evasion technique tailored to trick the random forest's Juni impurity metrics, like we saw in the lab, might trigger a massive anomaly spike in the neural network's activation function.
Exactly the point of the architecture. By forcing the models to essentially vote on a classification, you exponentially increase the complexity for the attacker. They no longer just have to optimize their payload to evade one statistical threshold. They have to solve a multivariable optimization problem that simultaneously tricks three disparate mathematical architectures without triggering any of them.
That sounds like a nightmare for an attacker.
It is. It raises the cost of the attack significantly.
Which is always the goal. Now, the second strategy involves manipulating the training phase itself through something called adversarial training. Mm. So if we know attackers are going to use the low and slow rate throttling from Lab 6.1, we don't just wait for them to deploy it against us.
Right. You actively generate those adversarial examples internally.
Sure.
You take your standard malicious traffic, you apply the gradient descent algorithms to throttle the rates and bypass your own model. And then this is the key part. You inject those successful evasions directly back into the training data set.
Oh, wow.
And you forcefully label them as malicious.
So you are artificially expanding the decision boundary. You're mathematically forcing the model to associate that specific heavy web browsing cluster not with benign video streaming, but with a throttled DDoS attack.
Exactly. It optimizes the loss function against those specific evasion tactics. However,
there's always a however.
Always. This creates a secondary problem.
Mm-hmm.
The more adversarial examples you inject to cover edge cases, the more complex the decision boundary becomes.
Okay, and why is that bad?
Because it can inadvertently lower the model's overall accuracy on standard, unmanipulated traffic. It is a constant calibration process. You can't just make it paranoid about everything without losing some general accuracy.
That makes total sense, which transitions perfectly into the final defensive strategy mentioned in the manual, drift monitoring.
Ah, yes.
The manual makes a huge point to emphasize that ML models are inherently data set dependent.
Yes, very important point.
A 99.43% accuracy rating on the CICADS 2017 dataset is just a snapshot of network behavior from that specific year. It's frozen in time. But corporate networks are organic, right? They breathe, they change.
They exhibit temporal drift.
Temporal drift, right.
Over the course of a year, an organization might migrate to a new cloud infrastructure. They might adopt different encryption protocols or change their VPN architecture. The underlying statistical distribution of what constitutes normal background traffic shifts permanently.
So the baseline moves.
Yes.
If your MLIDS is still calculating probabilities based on the 2017 baseline, it will perceive the new legitimate 2026 VPN traffic as anomalous.
Exactly.
Your false positive rate will climb, your precision will plummet, and you are right back to that alert fatigue scenario we discussed with the naive Bayes model.
This is exactly why an MLIDS requires continuous cross-dataset testing and drift monitoring. You have to actively measure the statistical divergence between the data the model is currently analyzing and the data it was trained on.
And what happens when they diverge too much?
When that divergence crosses a set threshold, the model must be taken offline, retrained on the contemporary data distribution, and validated all over again.
See, this highlights the critical operational loop for SOC trainees. We are moving so far away from an era where you just rack a security appliance, update the signature definitions once a week, and walk away.
Right. It's not set it and forget it anymore.
Not at all. Machine learning defense requires active, continuous management. It relies heavily on purple teaming.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, purple teaming is essential. It's where your offensive red team continuously designs new evasion techniques, like the low and slow throttling we saw, and immediately feeds those payloads to the defensive blue team.
Right. So the blue team can run adversarial training and adjust the models for drift. It really is an arms race of statistical logic.
The tools are automating the analysis of the packets, but they're absolutely not automating the defense strategy.
Yeah,
no.
The human element, you know, understanding feature importance, managing the precision recall trade-off to protect your team's cognitive load, and constantly questioning the validity of the model's baseline is more critical now than it ever was when we were just writing rejects signatures.
The threat actors are exploiting the math because they understand the logic behind the models.
Yeah.
Defenders have to operate with that exact same level of mechanical understanding.
And that is the core takeaway for anyone entering this field right now. The mathematics of adversarial machine learning are complex, sure, but the foundational security principles remain the same. You have to deeply understand your network's architecture, you must recognize the specific mathematical limitations of your ML tools, and you have to apply human critical thinking to the alerts in front of you. You know, trust, but verify the math.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave everyone with a final, slightly provocative thought regarding baseline data and temporal drift.
Oh, I like these.
As we look at the current landscape, the internet is becoming increasingly saturated with AI-generated content, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We've got automated agents, LLM-driven traffic, machine-to-machine APIs chatting all day. If we rely on capturing contemporary network traffic to retrain our models and establish a normal baseline, what happens when that baseline is primarily comprised of traffic generated by other artificial intelligence systems?
Oh, wow.
In a mature AI versus AI environment, if the models are constantly training on each other's outputs, how do we prevent the statistical definition of human behavior from being entirely erased from the decision boundary?
We are rapidly approaching the point where the models will have to account for model collapse within their own threat landscapes. That's a massive issue.
It's something to think about on your next shift. Keep analyzing the data, keep questioning the baseline, and keep asking those hard questions. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.